So here we are at Reza's flat. Hi, Reza.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
Very well, thank you. We are here with a special guest. It's Reza's brother, Rowan. Hi, Rowan.
Hi, guys.
So Rowan has agreed to do the special draw for us this week. And as we promised, we're giving away three prizes for supporting us on Twitter and voting for the New Media Europe Podcast Awards, which unfortunately, as you probably know, we did not win. However, we're still giving the prizes away, and Rowan has agreed to draw three Twitter names out of the bowl, and we're going to announce them now for you. Any comments? Any drum rolls?
I just wanted to remind you that it's my Guatemalan bowl.
A picture of which will be on the website at inglespodcast.com. Rowan, are you ready?
Yes, ready, guys. Good luck, everyone.
Thank you. Now, Rowan, could you please take the first name out of the bowl, mix them up, that's good, and then please read the name.
Can you read it?
Oh, God, I can't even read it.
Try it.
At Chemamon.
Can you spell it?
Chemamun.
Okay. Congratulations. You've won a T-shirt. And we have one more T-shirt to choose, so please take another name out of the bowl, Rowan.
The Guatemalan bowl.
A Guatemalan bowl, a picture of which you can find on the website, along with a picture of Rowan.
So it's at Raquel G8192161.
Congratulations. Also the winner of a Mansion Inglés T-shirt. And the third and final prize, the mini speakers for your mobile phone so that you can listen to music or our podcast. And the winner is...
at Annie_VZZ.
Congratulations. So again, those names. Winner of a T-shirt, we have at Chemamun, Chemamun. Also winner of a T-shirt, at Raquel, G81921621. And winner of the speakers that we will be sending to you by post at Annie, ANNY-VZZ. And we'll be sending those by post. I'll contact you on Twitter so that we can get your postal address. Reza, any comments about the conference that we came back from last Sunday?
Yes, it was extremely interesting. It was great fun to meet other podcasters. And we were thinking of you the whole time we were there at the award ceremony, because it was because of you that we got into the top 10 of our category of Audience Appreciation Awards. And we had a really good time, and we learned lots of good new strategies that hopefully we'll put into practice in our podcast in the future.
Exactly. And I was a bit disappointed that we didn't win. I thought we had a very good chance because of all the votes that you gave us on Twitter. So I was a bit disappointed last Saturday. But as Reza said, we're very happy and proud of our audience. We know we have the best audience. So thank you for voting if you voted.
Bye-bye.
Any final words, Ryan?
Oh, good luck. Oh, well done, guys, who won the prizes. Good luck with your podcasting in the future to Raz and Craig. Maybe I'll speak to you all again soon.
Just before we go, can you tell us where your accent's from?
Oh, I'm from Belfast in Northern Ireland. And Raz obviously is my brother, so I come to Valencia to visit him for a short holiday.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, everyone, to Aprender Inglés con Reza Craig, episode 109. If you're a new listener to this award-winning podcast, you're very welcome. Craig and I have over 40 years of teaching between us, and we hope we can help you improve your English and take it to the next level. I'm Reza.
And I'm Craig.
How are things, Craig?
Pretty good, my old friend. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excited about today's episode?
Very excited.
We're going to speak about extreme sports, which means it could be the shortest episode we've ever done, because if you've seen pictures of Reza and I, we're not exactly the sportiest, most adventurous guys out there, are we?
No, really. But our waistlines, where we have our waist, are becoming quite extreme.
Yeah, extremely.
They're quite extreme.
Extremely large, I think.
I consider the way I eat is an extreme sport.
It's really quite extreme. I eat quantities that would frighten some people.
So today with Razor and Craig, extreme eating and extreme waistlines. Before we go into some vocabulary connected to extreme sports, I'd just like to thank people who have been leaving us lovely reviews on iTunes. Nestor GM, JM, left us a lovely review. So did Ati Woman, Miguelacho, and Mini Hada. these are real people, but obviously not real names. They're the iTunes kind of names that people have on iTunes. So you know who you are. Those four people, thank you very much for leaving us 5 stars and very wonderful reviews. That's very kind of you. And if you'd like to leave us a review on iTunes, just go over there and where the podcast is, just leave us a review. That will help more people find our podcast because we become more visible in iTunes and higher up on the iTunes tree. So, extreme sports, Reza. We did speak about sports in general, or sport in general, back on episode 17, so that's inglespodcast.com/17, and you can find that link in our show notes at inglespodcast.com/109. But according to Wikipedia, the definition of extreme sports, also called action sports and adventure sports, they say on Wikipedia, extreme sports is a popular term for certain activities perceived as having a high level of inherent danger, which basically means dangerous sports. These activities often involve speed, height, a high level of physical exertion, and highly specialized gear or equipment. That's Wikipedia's definition of an extreme sport. So the first one on our list is bungee jumping. Bungee jumping. How would you describe bungee jumping?
Well, bungee jumping is...
In Spanish, it's puenting, isn't it? Puente.
Puenting.
Puenting.
Yeah. Puenting, yeah. And some Spanish people translate it wrongly. They think, oh, well, in English, it must be bridging. It isn't. It isn't called bridging. Bridging has an entirely different meaning in English. Bungee jumping is jumping off a high place, for example, a bridge or somewhere else, with an elastic rope.
Mm-hmm.
So because the rope is elastic, you jump, you fall, and then the rope, because it's elastic, stretches, so you go down a little bit further with the rope around you, and then you spring up again.
You bounce, don't you? Up and down and up and down. And I think it's originally from indigenous people, I think in Africa, who jumped from trees with vines. Vines are a very strong kind of branches that are connected to trees, aren't they?
But I think it's Papua New Guinea.
Is it Papua New Guinea?
I think it's Papua New Guinea. Okay. And they still do it today.
They do, yeah. And their heads sometimes hit the ground, don't they?
Yep.
It's very dangerous.
It was kind of a show of their manliness. It's apparently, I think in Papua New Guinea, until a boy does this, he's not considered a man.
Mm-hmm.
He has to do it to then be considered a man. So it's a rite of passage. Changing from one status to another.
An initiation ceremony into being a man. So women don't do it.
Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise that it became very popular in Australia. And then it became popular in many places. But I really think of Australia as the first place.
No, it was New Zealand.
Beg your pardon? New Zealand, and then from New Zealand probably to Australia. Because it's near Papua New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got from that part of the world to the rest.
Hang gliding is another extreme sport, although you don't tend to hear as much about hang gliding these days as a few years ago. Doesn't seem to be as popular. I think more extreme sports have taken over hang gliding in popularity.
So what do you do?
Well, you hang, which to hang is colgar. So you hang below a kind of a kite. Kite in Spanish is
cometa.
Cometa, of course. So you hang on flat, usually below this kite. You jump from a very high place, and the wind takes you The air currents keep you up and gently bring you down. And you can steer it. You can change direction.
Mm. So you glide.
Exactly.
You fly without a motor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Don't confuse hang gliding with just gliding. If you go gliding, you're in a type of plane, a plane without a motor. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go hang gliding, you're not in a plane. It's just you attached to a kite.
So, so what's paragliding then?
Well, as far as I know, although I'm no expert, paragliding is kind of like gliding with a parachute, paracaídos. But instead of going down at the normal speed, you glide. You kind of fly without a motorized plane. Mm-hmm. So you slowly go down. Parachuting is just you jump off a plane normally, or a helicopter or somewhere like that, pull the string and the parachute opens. That's parachuting. So paragliding is like a slower version of that with gliding.
And is there a difference between parachuting and skydiving?
Yes. Isn't skydiving where you jump from a very high altitude so that you have plenty of time to kind of do acrobatics in the air and make formations? Quite often people do it in a team, don't they?
Exactly.
And you'll be falling at a very fast speed until you pull the parachute just near the end when you have to.
Yeah, you can hold hands and make patterns in the air, and then as you approach the ground, you pull the chute and the chute opens. Mm-hmm.
There are other varieties of that. For example, wingsuiting.
What's wingsuiting?
Well, it's a bit like skydiving, but what you, instead of using a parachute to fall slowly, you actually wear a special suit which seems to have wings on it. The suit is designed in such a way so that it covers a large area. So like a parachute, then it works with the wind resistance. So because you spread out your arms and legs wearing this special suit, the wingsuit, that slows you down. So it's kind of like skydiving, but skydivers don't have a special suit. They just have a parachute. Wingsuiters have a special suit.
And it sounds also similar to base jumping, because if you base jump, you jump with a parachute.
Yep. I would say that wingsuiting is kind of like a mixture of base jumping and skydiving. Mm-hmm. So what's base jumping then?
Well, I know it's an acronym, B-A-S-E, but I'm not sure what the letters represent. B is when you jump from a building.
Right.
And what's A?
A from an antenna.
An antenna, like a tower.
Yeah, like a radio tower or communications tower. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
S
is a span. A span is anything which goes from one high point to another high point with a space in the middle. For example, a bridge. Mm-hmm. A bridge is a span.
Okay.
And the E is for earth, things which are natural.
Like a cliff.
Mountains, cliffs, alcantilados, things like that. That's why it's called base jumping, B-A-S-E. So you jump off the high place and you go as far as you can without a parachute. Then at the last minute, pull the string and the parachute opens.
Base jumping gets a lot of attention when people jump from high buildings in the city, doesn't it? For example, the Empire State Building or a San Francisco Bridge, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Craig, let's change to a different environment. Let's go to the ice. Can you think of any extreme sports which are done on ice?
Well, there's ice climbing, and you need special equipment, special gear for that. So you could climb the ice on glaciers, for example.
Right. So it's a bit like kind of mountain climbing, but instead of a mountain, you've got an ice or an ice glacier.
Exactly. Climb, of course, is escalar in Spanish, and people who climb mountains are mountaineers. So it's mountaineering. That's the sport. Mountaineering and rock climbing is very popular in Spain. I think Spain's one of the best countries in Europe for rock climbing in the northeast.
Craig, we've got on our list an extreme sport which many of our listeners probably have done: paintballing.
That's something I've always wanted to do, but I never have. Paintballing, when you have guns and you have teams, and the idea is to shoot people with paint. And if you're hit with the paint, then you don't continue. You're dead, in theory. It looks really exciting to me.
Yeah,
I'd like to do that.
And kind of fun because kind of there's fun, yeah. paint flying everywhere and colors, and it's kind of like being in an action film but without actually killing someone, just using paint.
Although funny you should say that, because years ago I have a friend was doing paintballing and actually died. I didn't know him personally.
Wow.
But a good friend of mine was paintballing with a guy who was a bit overweight, and this guy was running around, and he wasn't very old. He was in his 20s, and he had a heart attack and died during paintballing. So be careful.
Okay. Yeah. But that was just because his heart was in a bad condition.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, it could have been playing football. It wasn't connected to the sport. But if you're doing any sport, especially extreme sports, and you're not in shape, if you're not fit and you're doing activity that's different to what you usually do, there's that danger that something nasty and vinyl can happen to you. So be careful.
From people who've been paintballing more than once, like my brother, for example, he's done it a few times. He says that very often it's painful.
Yeah, because it's
the
like
balls
a,
hurt.
The balls, yeah, they
the
they
paintballs hurt you.
Obviously, they're shot out of a gun, so they probably sting. Yeah,
it's very important to wear protective goggles because they could blind you if they hit your eye. So you've got to protect your eyes. And people get bruises. A word that we taught last week, moradas.
Moradas. Yeah.
People often are bruised when they go paintballing, so it is quite extreme.
So there's kite surfing or kite boarding, which is having a kite attached to the surfboard and actually lifts you up off the ocean, puts you back on.
I'd love to try that. That looks really
good,
exciting.
It? Yeah. And really you have like the look it, of it on a windy day. You know.
I bet you'd need really strong arms and shoulders for that, because your arm must get pulled very violently when the kite brings you up into there. You'd need really strong grip.
Well, you do with windsurfing. I've done windsurfing before, and that you need to be, if it's a windy day, you really need to have strong arms for that too. There's sky surfing, which you jump out of a plane, don't you, with a surfboard
attached to you. Yeah, so you're not actually on the sea at all, you're in the air but with a surfboard attached to your feet.
Yeah. And skateboarding, of course, is a popular extreme sport.
Yes, it can be fairly extreme whenever they do acrobatic tricks, can't they? Or it can be just the sort of thing that people do to get around a city or to have fun. I must admit, some skateboarders are quite irritate me.
Why?
I don't like skateboarders who go down pavements of busy streets on their skateboard. I'm not at all bothered if they want to do it in a park or a quiet street, but I object to having to get out of their way. Mm-hmm. It bothers me. What about you?
Yeah, pavements are not really the best place to skateboard, are they?
In Valencia, I don't know if it happens in other cities, I've seen a few skateboarders occasionally go down a busy road on the skateboard.
Me too.
I just think they're crazy. If there's an accident, they're the ones who are going to be seriously injured. You know, I don't know why they do that. That's fairly extreme. That is very extreme, in fact.
Well, there's a sport called street luge, which is kind of similar to skateboarding, but you mentioned before that luge,
the winter Olympic sport of luge, which has existed for a long time, is hurtling. That's going down the ice very fast,
very
to
quickly.
Hurtle very quickly. You go down ice, so it's a winter Olympic sport, on basically a board. So there's very, very little space for you. It'd be very easy to fall off. And the speeds are incredible, like, I don't know, 80, 90 miles an hour.
So if you do luge in the street, L-U-G-E, it's a board with wheels. So you go down hills very, very quickly, obviously wearing a helmet and laying down on the board. That's street luge, isn't it?
Yeah. Craig, what about mountain biking? Have you ever been mountain biking?
I have, yeah. There's a couple of small mountains. They're big hills, really, to the north of Valencia. And I think you came once when we went mountain biking with Johnny.
Yeah. How long ago was that, Craig? I reckon it was about four sizes ago. Ave cuatro tallas.
When we had a more...
A less extreme waistline.
A more defined physique, yeah. I think. And we took our bikes up to... to Serra Nacara in the north of Valencia for some mountain biking. It's great fun. I'd much rather go mountain biking than trekking. I mean, trekking, okay, it can be nice in certain places, but mountain biking for me is more fun.
Me too.
Just an opinion. White water rafting, very difficult to say. White water rafting, going down rivers where there is white water, so there are rapids, on a raft.
So the white on the water is like the foam, la espuma.
Exactly.
Because it's very violently moving water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Have you done it? Yeah.
I have, yeah. I've done it twice. Once with my dad for his birthday up in near where Mamen lives, in Westcar. There's a lovely place for white water rafting there. And my dad fell in. He fell in the river. And then I was laughing so much when he fell in that I fell in. And the water was really, really cold. And Mamen knows how cold the water is in the bottom of the Pyrenees. Very, very cold. So that wiped the smile off my face. And it removed the smile.
What's the difference between a raft and a boat? Well, I'm no expert, but I would say that a raft is really more or less just a superficial vessel.
Well, I want
whereas a boat is deeper. You can get inside a boat. Whereas a raft kind of floats on the top.
No? I want to say, I nearly said that a raft is flat, but of course that in the sport that's called whitewater rafting, the raft isn't flat. It's got
but
sides.
Nearly. But very, very, very short sides.
It's very shallow, yeah. But yeah, and it's inflatable. Yeah. So it has air inside, usually.
But not an old-fashioned raft. A raft doesn't have to have air in it, does it?
No. No.
But for me, it's something that floats. It floats.
But boats float as well.
Yes, it floats, but you can't get very deep inside them. It's more on the surface, whereas a boat can have 1, 2, 3, or these days 20 stories. 20 pisos.
Maybe it's not a raft. Maybe it's size. Maybe a boat's bigger.
Could be.
Water skiing. One thing about these.
I've been water skiing.
Have you?
Yeah.
Where?
I'm surprised, aren't you? Yeah.
Well, in Belfast.
It's the one extreme sport I've done. No, in the USA.
Really?
Yep.
Which part?
In the state of Maine. I can't remember exactly the where, but it was a lake.
Did you get up? Did you manage to
ski? Yeah, I managed to stay on my feet.
It's not easy, is it?
The first couple of times, they warn you that you won't be able to stay up for more than a couple of seconds, and you think, no, it can't be that hard. And you stay up for about half a second.
Yeah.
And you fall 20 times until you realize the trick of it. And then I managed to stay up for about a minute and a half without falling over.
Excellent, excellent.
But if you lose concentration for a split second, you fall over.
You really have to focus.
Really have to concentrate.
And it's a lot worse falling forward than it is falling back, I found out. It's really...
Falling forward, yeah.
If you fall on your face, it can really
hurt.
It's
horrible, yeah. The best thing is if you know you're going to fall... Let go of the rope and fall back.
Fall back.
Don't fall forward. Just let go and fall.
Exactly.
Let go with the flow.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you're wearing the water skis and they will always make you float. So it's better to fall back and the water ski kind of floats up to the surface and just lie on your back and wait for the boat to come round again. But it was great fun, yeah. Great fun.
We also have cliff diving. That's also connected to water. Cliff diving or cliff jumping, where people dive from very high cliffs.
Or jump. What's the difference?
Dive is when your head goes first into the water, and jump is when your feet go first into the water.
So you can go in head first or feet first.
Exactly.
Right. Do you prefer jumping or diving into water?
It depends how high it is.
I never dive into water. I've got a kind of a phobia of it.
Really?
I only ever jump into water. I don't like to dive. I don't like the feeling of my head going in first and all that water kind of, I feel it shooting up my nose and everything. I just don't like it.
I can dive into swimming pools and from a diving board, but if it's high, I prefer to jump. Much more fun. With these activities that are ING activities, like climbing, skiing, surfing, Use the verb go. So you go surfing, you go, not do or play. It's not do or play, it's go. Go rock climbing, go ice climbing, go bungee jumping, go hang gliding, etc. One more we have, highlining. I might know what that is, but I'm not too sure.
Well, you've probably heard of tightrope walking.
I have.
Okay. So a tightrope is a rope which is tight and you walk across it. Okay. So there's another type of similar activity, but it's with what they call a slack rope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't written it here on a note for a good reason, because slack rope walking is not necessarily an extreme sport. So the opposite of tight, tenso, is slack, flojo.
Loose.
Loose, yep. So slack line walking or slack rope walking is when the rope isn't tight. So the difference is, if the rope's tight, the rope doesn't really move. You have to move on the rope. Whereas if it's a slack line, S-L-A-C-K, slack, the rope moves with you. It's more interesting. It's more interactive because the rope's slack. So you've got to watch out. The rope's going to move. It's going to swing. It's going to swing like a pendulum and move. But you can do that from one tree to another. That's not necessarily dangerous. So what is highlining? Well, highlining is walking on a slack line, but from an extremely high place. So, for example, from one mountain peak to another, it's bad enough.
It sounds really difficult.
Really dangerous. It's bad enough if you were to do it on a tightrope, but it's even harder then if you use a slack line. So the line moves with every step. The line moves, it swings, and you're a drop, which you're walking across a drop, which would kill you if you fell. So usually they have a harness attached to the rope so that if they fall, they'll be stuck on the rope and someone will come and rescue them. But still, it must be pretty frightening to do it.
Is that something you'd like to try?
No.
And you? No, it doesn't. It doesn't appeal to me.
It would be so frightening.
It doesn't take my fancy. Are there any extreme sports on this list that you'd like to try?
Well, I'd like to do water skiing again.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I have been water skiing. And I'd like to do it again. I'd like to do it again. Any of the ones that I haven't done, maybe paintball. I haven't done that. I'd like to go paintballing.
Me too. Definitely.
I wouldn't go bungee jumping.
I've been bungee jumping.
Oh wow! Tell me about it.
In New Zealand a few years ago, mm-hmm. Actually at the bridge where it was invented. Jumped off that bridge, and it was an interesting story.
The bridge where it was first done by Westerners. Let's not be Western centric here. Yeah. In Papua New Guinea, they've been doing it for centuries.
Let me rephrase that. The place where it was invented as an extreme sport and commercialized. I can't remember the name of the bridge, but it's definitely not the highest bridge, but it's still pretty high and pretty scary. And the thing was, I was waiting to jump and the guy was putting the bungee around my feet and tying me up and speaking to me. And he said, "Oh, where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from the UK." He says, "Oh, yeah, it's the British people. They're usually the ones that don't jump very well. And the British people usually don't, they're not very adventurous. And it takes them a long time, you know, before they actually jump." So I was thinking, okay, right, I'm going to show this guy. So when it was my turn, I just went up to the platform, I looked down, I opened my arms and I jumped. And then I realized after, he probably says that to everybody. He probably says that if you're French, if you're Italian, if you're German, just to make sure you jump quickly. Because it's not a natural thing. You know, everything in your body is screaming at you, don't do it, don't jump, it's too high. Everything in your brain is telling you not to jump, and you have to jump anyway.
Well, how did you feel? Can you remember? Can you describe how you felt as you were going down? Did you think you were going to die?
Please don't break. Please, please don't let this bungee break. And then when it held me and I started bouncing, it was just like thankful that it didn't break. It was good fun. I really enjoyed it.
Had you ever felt as much adrenaline going through your body before?
No. I don't think I have. I think it was one of the best experiences. I've also been white water rafting, which was really good fun, in the same country, New Zealand. And it was a very extreme kind of river. So the rapids were very strong and we went down big drops. And that was also really exciting. It was the adrenaline was pumping. When the adrenaline in your body pumps, it's kind of like a natural high. I would think it's like taking strong drugs. You get this rush of adrenaline to your brain. It's amazing. You really feel alive when you're doing that kind of thing.
So you like the adrenaline rush.
Yes. Yeah,
the rush when something comes quickly.
But I don't think I'm an adrenaline junkie, which means I don't need to have that feeling and rush very often. But it's nice when you do it.
So you like taking risks? You like putting yourself at risk from time to time?
Occasionally, yes. I think sometimes I'm a risk taker. So I do like taking risks. To take a risk is arriesgar.
Yeah.
So you take a risk when you do dangerous things. You put yourself at risk. So when I did the bungee jump, I put myself at risk. Before we continue with this podcast, Reza and I would like to thank our wonderful sponsors, iTalki. Now, what is iTalki? iTalki is a wonderful way for you to improve your English with a personal English tutor. One-to-one, on the internet, with Skype, you can learn with a native speaker. We recommend iTalki for various reasons. It's convenient, it's affordable, and you can choose whatever teacher you like on their website. They have a wide selection of teachers from various English-speaking countries, Australia, South Africa, Britain, of course, Ireland, Canada, United States. So if you go to their website, sign up for iTalki, then you can start to browse and look for different teachers, have a look at the videos that the teachers have made introducing themselves. And if you don't like your teacher, then you could just change and try a different teacher. And as a special offer to listeners of this podcast, iTalki are offering a free lesson. If you sign up on our website, they will give you 100 free credits when you book your first lesson on iTalki. So if you'd like more information, just go to inglespodcast.com/iTalki. And both of us would like to thank iTalki very much for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Mind if I go off on an angle for a minute? I go off on a tangent, as you said in a previous episode.
Wear yourself out.
I'd like to know what psychologists and psychiatrists think of all this, because I find it quite interesting. Because I'm going to sound big-headed now, but I consider myself the type of person who does quite often take risks, but not physical risks. Mm-hmm. I am averse to physical risk. I don't like the idea. I have a natural aversion to physical risk.
What does aversion mean?
Una aversión.
Okay, it's the same. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. So I have a natural aversion to physical risk. However, maybe it sounds big, I think I do quite often take risks in life in other areas.
In what ways? In what areas?
Socially.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I think I'm the sort of person who quite quickly can treat someone in a very, very informal way. And sometimes people find it a bit shocking. It's like, oh, why is this person being so informal with me? They barely know me. Some people consider that a bit risky, but it's the sort of risk that I take all the time. Mm-hmm. But I don't like the idea of putting a rope around me and jumping off a bridge because of what might go wrong. But I'm not bothered by the idea of what might go wrong, by being too informal with someone. They might not like it, but big deal. If they don't like it, they'll tell me.
Yeah, but it's a very different thing, though, isn't it? Because
this is my point. I find it quite interesting. I wonder if it says anything about our characters. By our, I mean everyone on the planet. For example, I find it very intriguing that there are people out there who might be adrenaline junkies, they might go, you know, bungee jumping all the time, whitewater rafting, highlighting, whatever, but they always highlining, but they without doubt will always vote for the most conservative political party there is. I find that very interesting. Like, I risk my life for no good reason whatsoever other than the adrenaline all the time. But, oh my God, I'm horrified at the idea that there might be a social revolution. That's horrifying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that there are other people who, for me, the idea of a social revolution quite interests me. I'm quite keen on that. If there's a revolution, count me in. But jump off a bridge? No, God, no. Do you know what I mean? What do you think about all that?
So, no, you'd say you're a risk taker in certain areas. So socially, you would not necessarily play safe. So you would say things in certain social situations that might cause someone not to like you or might make you maybe the center of attention.
I'd take the risk. I don't want them not to like me, but I'll take the risk.
But both of those, I mean, if you do an extreme sport or you take risks socially, you, in both cases, you're stepping outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
So you're doing things that make you a little bit uncomfortable, perhaps to experiment or perhaps to better yourself as a human being. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, both are not playing safe and stepping outside their comfort zone, which I think is a very good thing.
Yeah, I wonder, would psychologists come to any conclusion if they were analysing a person? How would they compare the social risk taker but who's naturally averse to physical risk to the adrenaline junkie who's extremely conservative? Do you know what I mean? I find it fascinating. There's no answer. I just find it fascinating that you can be like that.
Well, if there are any psychologists listening and you have a thought on what we're speaking about, we'd love to hear from you. Remember, you can contact us via SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/Inglez podcast. So, Reza, what's a daredevil?
Well, Craig, I said you were a bit of a daredevil to go bungee jumping and white water rafting. A daredevil is someone who does things which are daring. They take risks. They do dangerous things. The word dare can be a noun or a verb. For example, if I say to you, I dare you to go base jumping. I dare you to. That means, a ver si te atreves. I dare you to is like, I am like challenging you to do it.
So to dare to do something is atreverse.
Yes, but you can also dare another person to do something. If I dare to go bungee jumping, is me atrevo a hacer puenting. But if I say, I dare Craig to go highlining, like, yo te reto a ver si te atreves tú.
So if we were in a bar and there was a really attractive lady having a drink and I said, Reza, I dare you to offer to buy her a drink.
That's right. You say, a ver si te atreves.
A ver si te
atreves.
Si, si.
Yeah. And I'd say, okay, I dare to go up to her, so I'm going to do it. So you can dare yourself or you can dare another person. Mm-hmm. And if you're a person who dares to do things, you're a daredevil.
And it's quite often used in a negative, isn't it? If I say, don't dare, don't you dare do that. Mm-hmm. No atreves a hacerlo.
Yeah, particularly like kind of teachers telling off kids or parents. Like parents saying to the kid, don't you dare throw that on the ground. I've told you before, don't you dare do it. No te atrevas. No,
don't you dare take any more cookies.
And people involved in extreme sports, they dare to do things which most of us don't.
Which is why they're daredevils. Do you think we become more adverse to risk as we get older?
Yes, I notice that I play safe now more often. To play safe is to not take risks.
So you're not so much as a risk taker that you used to be.
Yeah. I reckon the older you get, generally, the more comfortable you get, generally, the more financially secure you get, and you got more to lose. When you're young, you haven't got much to lose. You haven't built up much wealth. You haven't built up much of a position and much to lose. But when you're older, you could lose it all, so you don't want to risk it.
And physically also, when you're younger, you think you're going to live forever. You're not worried so much about your health and you take more risks physically.
Yep.
Then as you get older, you tend to play it safe more. You lack the courage to do things or you lack the nerve to do things. Lack is falta. So you don't have the courage to do things as much when you're older.
When you were young, you just go for it. You go all out.
Yeah.
Sin barreras, ir al grano, ya está, to go for it.
Let's go for it. Let's do it. You don't think of the consequences because you're seeking thrills. You're seeking that adrenaline rush.
You're a thrill seeker.
Yep.
And going back to what I was saying earlier, I think it's kind of the same mentally as well. It's natural that most people, no not all of us, but most people, become more averse to risks socially, politically, etc. when we get older as well. I mean, how many people started off as very revolutionary, kind of left-wing politically, and ended up
I did.
In the conservative, in a very conservative way of thinking. For example, I know someone who lives in Valencia, so I better not mention his name. When he got married, there's people listening to me who know who he is, but luckily he won't be listening. When he got married many years ago, he, on his wedding invitations, he had a picture of El Che, Che Guevara.
Mm-hmm.
The iconic revolutionary figure.
Yeah.
And now he harks back to the good old days
What does hark back
is reminisce. Remember in a fond way. He harks back to the good old days of Franco in Spain. And you can't get much more conservative and right. The same person, eh?
Are you taking a risk in speaking about
No, because this person won't be listening, okay. But some of his relatives will, okay. But I don't think they'll mind. It's a real person. So I think that's an extreme example. It's extreme, I know, from Che to Franco, the same person. But there, most of us become more conservative, less risky politically and socially, not only physically. I believe as well.
I think
you say you have.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think as you get older, you do change in that respect.
Although I have to say, I'm impressed with your story of the bungee jumping. How old were you when you went bungee jumping?
About 32, 33.
That's quite old to do it for the first time.
No, wait a second. I was older. I think it was probably about 12 years ago. So that was probably about 42, 43.
12 years ago, Craig was 105. He's sorry. How old were you at the time, Craig?
Yeah, probably about 42, 43.
Wow, you were a daredevil.
But there were people doing it that were in their 60s, in their late 60s. I mean, it's all you have to do is jump. You know, it's not a skillful thing. You just jump.
Yeah. See, it's something that I don't plan to do. I never say never. They say never, who knows, I might do it. Someone might talk me into it. I don't say it's impossible, but I'm really not keen. But I wouldn't mind when I'm 75-year-old participating in a revolution. Wouldn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
A social revolution. Well, but bungee jumping, I'm not sure about.
You know what they say? It's not the years in your life that's important. It's the life in your years.
Ah, see.
And with that thought, we'll leave you. If you feel like taking a risk and sending us a voice message, you can reach us on SpeakPipe, which is speakpipe.com/Inglés podcast. You can leave us a voice message there or send us an email with a comment or question to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, that's Reza@belfastreza@gmail.com.
And if you'd like to become a patron of the show, you could go to patreon.com/Inglés podcast and support us for the show notes.
By signing up to www.patreon.com/Inglés podcast, we might be able to raise enough money to transcribe all the notes. We need about $100 a month. We'd like to thank the people who have signed up to patreon.com so far. Could you read the names, please, Craig?
Yes, our 9 lovely sponsors are Lara, Thara, Mamin, Juan, Sara, Rafael, Corey Finneran from IVMV Podcast, Daniel and Manuel. Thanks to all of you for donating to our Patreon campaign. And on next week's podcast, Reza and I will be speaking about directions, how to ask for directions, and perhaps more importantly, how to understand directions when people tell you in English. Until then, it's goodbye from Reza.
And it's cheerio from Craig.
Goodbye. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.